Today on Galazzo, we travel back to the turn of the millennia when donkeys flew. The amazing story of Chievo and how the flying donkeys ended up to their asses in scandal. Plus, Ivan Gazidis, what? And that Inter comeback. It's the summer of 2001, and virtually nobody is listening to Ivana Spagna singing Call Me, because that was back in 1984. But nice to hear again anyway.
Yeah, reworked by Carly Jepsen, went into Call Me Baby.
Oh, right. Okay. Thanks, James Horncastle. Yeah, and alongside you, James, Gabriele Marcotti.
Ivana Spagna, of course, keeping up that wonderful Italian tradition of chantuses.
We'll be hearing more from her, you'll be delighted to know, listener, yes, later on. But anyway, back in that summer of 2001, when people weren't listening to Call Me, when they were packing up their things from the Vacanze Estive and heading back home up the Alto Strada del Sole, something was going on in a tiny suburb of a northeastern city that was about to unleash a miracle on what was a crisis-ridden calcio. I'm talking about the birth of the Chievo miracle. The team that swept from a tiny little suburb of about 4,000 people to the brink of the Champions League and has then swept kind of back down again and has this week been handed a points deduction. What happened and how did Chievo become the bad guys? That's what this Galazzo is all about. First of all, Gab, set the scene for us. What kind of Italian football world were we heading into in the 01-02 season?
James, in some ways, I think it was a magical time. No, it was, you know how like the age-old question, would you rather live at the ascent of a civilization or during its decline?
Right.
In some ways, this was sort of the decline that started, but nobody really noticed because it was still, life was still good. You know, the Roma and Lazio had won the Scudetto in back-to-back years, which to a lot of people who were not fans of Juventus and Milan, you know, the duopoly, which had dominated the 90s, you know, there was a sense that stuff could change. All the bad stuff that we later associate had either just begun or was beginning, you know, Napoli going bust, the whole Craniotti mess at Lazio, Fiorentina going bust, all of that was to come, but you could see it
and
was...
And Calciopoli too.
Bubbling under.
Oops, I've tested positive for Nandrolone. That was happening as well.
Right.
Although that was mostly Dutch guys, to be fair. And if you're in the Venn diagram where you're Dutch and you play for Juve...
Well, against all of that backdrop, you had Chievo coming in to Serie A. Now, Chievo were an interesting club in that only 15 years before they'd still been an amateur side, owned by the youngest president in Serie A, Luca Campidelli, a man who made cake for a living. They had begun an extraordinary rise. It made some interesting appointments. Giovanni Sartori as director of football and Alberto Malassani, a former photocopy salesman, as the new head coach. Under Malassani, they won Serie C1, went up to Serie B, where their city rivals Hellas Verona, a vastly bigger side, were playing. And this is where that infamous nickname began.
The Flying Donkeys. Yeah, because donkeys will fly before there is a derby in Verona. And I think one of the really curious things about this is that fans of Hellas think that Chievo have done kind of everything to appropriate their history, be it moving to the Bentegodi and playing there, be it wearing blue and yellow as their colours, when in the past they wore blue and white. And
name, right?
I mean, yeah, exactly, because for years they were Paluani Chievo.
Which is Campidelli's cake company.
Yeah, and then they become Chievo Verona. And one of the reasons why they became Chievo Verona is because Luca Campidelli's dad, Luigi, actually bought a small stake in Hellas Verona with the kind of aim of taking over the club and merging them both together. So, yeah, exactly. So that is, again, one of the reasons why Hellas fans can't stand the sight of Chievo.
But at this point in our story, everybody else certainly can, because they are very much the good guys. Under the tutelage of a vaguely Peter Sellers-esque figure, Gigi Del Neri, they win promotion to Serie A for the first time, of course, where they would be competing with the likes of Juve, Inter Milan, with players like Del Piero, Turam, Shevchenko, Montella, Totti, I mean, you name it, with a squad that included Lorenzo Danna. Remember, he was a qualified lawyer.
Yeah, who's now the coach of Chievo.
Massimo Marazzina, right? And Heriberto. Do you remember Heriberto?
Luciano.
Also known as Luciano. Yeah, and it didn't look... I think if there was one certainty at the start of that season, Gab, it was that Chievo were going to go straight back down.
Yeah, and it seemed guaranteed. And, you know, the guy Heriberto you mentioned, for those who don't know, he was a guy who... I think he was at Bologna, if I'm not mistaken. He was like 17 years old, you know, tricky Brazilian winger, and you know, not a bad footballer, except later... I don't know if it was at Kiev or after he moved, but they find out, actually, Heriberto doesn't exist. You're actually like a 24-year-old guy named Luciano.
Didn't Heriberto exist but had died and he'd taken over a dead man's identity?
Yeah, because in order to get to Europe, and this is a common practice, not only in South America but in Africa as well, agents come to these players promising a move to one of the big leagues, let's say, and they approached... Luciano and said, actually, in order to get a club, you're going to have to be younger. So we're going to give you these false papers. And I think Heriberto had passed away and these papers were given to him. And yeah, he was, you know, a few years younger than he actually was.
And he was the star of what was a spectacular Chievo side. But if I recall correctly, it was he who actually admitted it. He wasn't found out. He said he couldn't live with it. And I think his suspension came while he was still playing for Chievo. But the thing was, far from being relegation fodder, Chievo started like an absolute train. The first two games, they beat Fiorentina and Bologna. And next up, took on Juventus and went 2-0 up within the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, and this was it the Juve side that had just got rid of Zidane, but was rebuilding with Gigi Buffon and
Nedved
and co. And they were completely fearless. And I think Del Neri, who, after the job he did at Chievo, was chosen to replace Jose Mourinho at Porto after Mourinho had won the Champions League there and thrown his medal into the crowd. Really interesting figure. Sometimes a bit of a figure of fun because he's from Friuli, speaks a dialect that few people other than his players can understand, speaks super quick as well. But I suppose... brought back a kind of classic 4-4-2, high-pressing, insane offside trap that they just could play with their eyes closed and kept catching some of the best strikers, not only of the age, but of all time, offside. And, just showed incredible character going away to places like San Siro, the Delle Alpi, sometimes going behind, coming back, getting in front, and all that sort of thing, and just sticking it up them.
What they had, too, what made it work is they had these players who were wonderfully one-dimensional. I think it was Cossato, who's this guy who's a big, tall dude, but he's like a winger because he just runs up and down. He has zero ability whatsoever, but he'd score all these goals where, you know, you mentioned the 4-4-2, he'd be the guy who'd like, you know, Heriberto would run down one flank and he'd sort of appear at the far post and he'd be jumping against, you know, fullback who was like 5'9", 5'10". So every time he'd beat him. And it took people a long time to figure out what was going on. And then, of course, in midfield, they had the pride of Ashton under Lyme and future World Cup winner, Simone Perrotta, who...
who was the record signing, to give you... perspective on their finances, the record signing for I think €1 million.
Yeah, and he just kind of rampaged and made late runs into the box. And then they had one of my all-time favorites, Eugenio Corini, aka Il Genio, the genius, who when he was young, he was supposed to be the next big thing. Remember the
under-21 side he was in?
Yeah, and he moved to Juventus and stuff, and it just never worked out for him because he's the kind of guy who, I don't know, I guess Pirlo comparisons might seem OTT, but sort of...
similar kind of...
thick, bad Pirlo, the deep-lying playmaker who gets the ball, passes it.
Imagine Pirlo with no hair.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Imagine Pirlo who'd never met Mazzoni or Ancelotti, and maybe there you go. Campionato di calcio italiano. You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. for that period, and indeed the season that followed, Chievo were playing at a completely different velocity to the rest of Serie A. They were doing things like going to San Siro and beating Inter.
And the Inter with Ronaldo and Christian Vieri up front.
But also Hector Cooper on the bench.
Yeah, but I mean, you had this game, what, before Christmas, where it's essentially a top of the table clash between Chievo and Inter. And Chievo, did they go in front and then Vieri equalised and then they still managed to get in front again and a famous win? Just insane.
Extraordinary. Yeah. And they ended up topping the table, leading at one point, I think, by 4 points. For 6 weeks, they were on top of the Serie A standings. And the other thing about this was that this came at a time when the other Verona team were pretty much symbolising all that was nasty about football. Racist fans, financial problems, beginning a descent down through the divisions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the other things that that Hellas fans ended up really quite resenting about Chievo is that I think because Hellas have been there since, you know, the beginning of time, and everyone associates football in that region with Verona, with Hellas, that Chievo were just given a kind of a pass, really. They were a clean slate where they were like, we're everything that Hellas are not. So we've got Christian Manfredini, who's, you know, one of the, you know, a kid who was born in the Ivory Coast, adopted by Italian parents, a little bit like Balotelli's story. He's running up the wing for us. You know, we've got a Neapolitan, D'Angelo, at the back, who's our captain, has been with us for yonks. You know, when you all, you know, when Maradona comes here, you all chant these terrible things about people from the south and Neapolitan.
So years later, so too was your manager Andrea Mandorlini as well, as it turned out. It really was, as James says, it was this remarkable situation. And what made the duality with Verona worse was, and some people may remember this, but 84-85 season, which also happens to be the last time referees were assigned to games based on an absolutely random draw, weird coincidence, that was the last year that a small club won the title, and that's when Verona did it. And back then, and that was, you know, Hans-Peter Briegel and Elkir Larsson and all these guys. And so there was actually a real feel-good about Verona. And then they become kind of the ogres standing for everything that's wrong with Italian football. And Chievo become this lovable, cuddly sort of alternative version of Verona, which, for those who haven't been, it's not only one of the wealthiest cities in Italy, it's a city of Romeo and Juliet. It's a city of the arena. They talk a little bit funny. They sound a bit slow when they
swear
talk
all the
with
time.
Their accent.
They have the most amazing chips. In the Piazza dell'Erbe, the chips there are extraordinary.
But, you know, they're not bad people.
Right.
You know, but they were all made to seem like these horrendous ogres. And,
right.
Yeah.
And as James is saying, because they had virtually no fans of their own, they kind of became everybody's pet team. And only helping was that wonderful, wonderful anthem produced by Ivana Spagna. That first season, they ended in fifth place, just missing out on a Champions League position or a qualifying spot. Then there was a seventh place finish, then a ninth in the last season under Del Neri, and then they began to fall away a little bit. But in 2007, under the return to Del Neri, Chievo finally went down, but only for one season. They came back up. So the fairy tale continued. Except that as we pick up the story now in 2018, with Chievo celebrating 10 straight years in the top flight, it's a very different picture. Currently bottom of the Serie A Classifica on minus points. Why, Gabriele?
Okay, this is where I have to lapse into accounting and bring up amortization. I'll try to make this as painless as possible. In fact, if you're a film guy, you remember The Big Short?
Oh, yeah.
I know this is actually audio, not video, which might be a better thing. I'm not exactly Margot Robbie, but I'll try to explain this as simply as I can.
In as sexy a manner as possible.
Exactly.
Can we just run the bubble bath? Okay, away you go.
Okay, so basically when a football club sells a player, they book the whole value of the sale. So if I sell Charlie, our producer, to James for 10 quid, for that season, I say, oh, look, I've made 10 quid.
But James, on the other hand, won't put the 10 pounds he spent on Charlie on his books.
That's right. James will go and he'll sign Charlie to a 5-year contract, and this is the magic called amortization. He'll write, okay, so Charlie's costing me £2 a year for the next 5 years.
Right, okay. So why has this been a problem for Kievo?
So this can, you can do all sorts of magical fiddling with this, because what happens is, if James and I, let's say James has another guy named Ben, mm-hmm. hypothetically, right? So I swap Charlie for Ben.
Right.
And what I do is I say, oh, look, I just acquired Ben for, and I had to spend £10 to do it, but in my books, it's £2 a year for the right. next 5 years. But I've sold Charlie for £10.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got a plus 10 on the other side.
Right. So you're
so
£8
I've made
profit.
£8,
right.
yes.
Now, what's important from Kievo's point of view here is that this is how they were basically appearing solvent in order to have a license to continue playing in City Out. Yeah.
And this is also the second time they got busted. They got busted in 2009. This time around, the issue is with Cesena, another City Out club falling onto hard times and in the hands of some pretty despicable people. Cesena went bust. It's emerged that they were doing all sorts of deals with Kievo, with these very obscure players, youth players and stuff like that.
How many deals? Isn't there talk of about 60 players or so that Kievo and
Cesena? I think over 4 years there was talking of maybe something like 60 million or something like that.
Right.
In terms of, you know,
in terms of money.
In terms of trading, right. You know, pretty much unknown young players.
Right.
Or trading players who then immediately get loaned back.
Right. Which may, on one hand, seem like a little bit of creative accounting, such as a lot of businesses may get up to, but these are young players' careers that may be affected by this, by getting sent out on loan or just being used as make weight in a deal or in a bit of accounting.
To be fair, I mean, these are players who aren't going to have careers.
I mean, Cesena provided probably more players for Antonio Conte's quarterfinal reaching European Championship side than any other team. You know, when you think of Marco Parolo, Graziano Pelle, there are more. Check it out. You know.
Okay. So,
but these were not Pelle or Parolo
no.
type players.
No.
These were absolute no names. And, you know, they came out and they argued, and they came up with such a stupid defense, which for me, I don't like Campidelli. I haven't liked him. Since we kind of, you know, looked behind, like the Wizard of Oz, you know.
Right.
You
look so Luca Campidelli was about 32 when Kievo came
out. He stopped being amusing a long time ago. He used to say, oh, look, he looks like Harry Potter. Like,
right.
No, yeah.
He was also a massive English football fan and used to go across and watch Preston North End and this kind of thing.
Yeah, he's a massive tool is what he is, you know.
Right. Like, why have you
Daniel
had such
Radcliffe,
an issue with him then?
Because it's people like him who ruin Italian football. This club has no business being in Serie A. They're in Serie A because of this creative accounting and this cheating, which is what it is. It's cheating. They've been found guilty of it. They were found guilty of it before. Now it's happened again. They had Del Neri, who, yes, they did play nice football and it was impressive and he can be entertaining. But let's not forget, this is a Gea guy. This is a guy who after he left, you know, he went to Porto, he went to Roma. He stunk it up everywhere he went because mm-hmm. nobody could understand him.
Right.
The minute he was no longer in the Gea blanket, you know, the bottom fell out.
Oh, he got sampled to the Champions League preliminaries, Gab. That's why he got the Juve job.
Yeah, and less said about
it's extraordinary
that.
Extraordinary the number of jobs he's had, actually.
Yes, yeah. For a guy who doesn't make any sense when he speaks.
Right.
And you know what? You say, oh, it's from Friuli. Well, you know, Fabio Capello's from Friuli.
Yeah,
right. Eddie Ray is from Friuli. They don't behave like this guy. I'm joking, obviously. The opposite talent there. The funny thing about Gigi Del Neri, he got a little bit of himself, was when he went to Porto, he lasted, what, like,
he didn't,
like, two, like six games or even less than that. And Jose Mourinho, who, of course, I remember back in when we had a good dialogue. Obviously, Porto was his old club. And after they sacked Del Neri, I remember him, like, giggling about it. He said, like, ha, this guy thought he could go into the house of the European champions, speak to my defense, or what was left of it, because obviously Carvalho and Ferreira were gone, and he would show them videos, grainy, crappy videos of Kievo, to show them how they should move around the pitch.
Oh, come on. This is what Sacchi did with Milan players. No, he's like, this is Brusca. This is, who was it? At the back for Parma. Come on.
I think that's the obvious illusion, though, that Mourinho was making.
Mm.
It's one thing for Sacchi to be doing it.
Yeah.
Gigi Del Neri is not Sacchi and never will be.
I probably thought he was, though.
Mm.
But so, this is such a Mourinho thing to do. I remember when Benitez replaced him at Inter, and the reporters would say, oh, Inter... if you've seen the interview, it's like, they've lost again. They've lost again, have they? So he just revels in it. Loves it.
Or when Mourinho replaced Mancini and he complained that there was no... He's like, what? There's no manager's office at the training ground. Mancini, of course, who, as you know, takes criticism and provocation very well and in a very even-handed way and is in no way hysterical. He's like, yeah, well, my office is the training pitch.
Interesting. Chievo, though, James, has Gab been a little bit over the top in his feelings there about the Flying Donkeys?
I think the worst thing is that they now look like the worst kind of hypocrites. Insofar as when they came up, they were like, we are pure, we are anti-business, you know, you should have seen Modgy's face when we went top of the league, you know, we're showing that you can do it another way, and that's why
Modgy's
everyone likes
face was
us.
Smiling because his client was the manager, but yeah. We had this idea in Italy of la provincia, right? The provincial town, the small town outside of the big cities where everything is pure and wonderful. They used to say the exact same stuff about Parma, and of course, we know how well that one turned out, not once, but twice. And this idea that, these people in the countryside with their old school values and they don't take things too seriously and it's all about how hard work and getting up early to go and milk the cows and the chickens. And you know what? It's not, okay? Even him with his stupid pandoro, which, by the way, is nowhere near as good as panettone from Milan. Which,
yeah.
Pandoro's like
so this is what Paluani made and still make.
This crappy, disgusting, synthetic, sugar-based...
Well, James,
ugly...
you were at Chievo's first game of this season in, 30-degree heat in Verona?
And even hotter in the press room in the bowels of the Bentegodi where there's no air conditioning. And, yeah, they were serving up nice little fruit pots, but then a side of Pandoro, which was un po' pesante. Yeah.
Pandoro or panettone?
It was Pandoro.
No, I'm saying for you, Pandoro or panettone?
Yeah.
No, so you're only supposed to eat panettone in December.
Yeah.
And then the leftovers in January.
Right.
Pandoro, of course, because he really is all about flogging his crappy cake year round, you know, they try to serve it to you throughout the year. It's just bland. And the other absurdity of it, this whole like idea of like, oh, look, the man with a cake factory. You know, it's not like Campidelli's sitting there in his kitchen like with a chef's hat on, surrounded by flour.
He's not?
No, it's a freaking mechanized factory where you probably don't even have any workers anymore. You probably have just one man pushing a button and this whole mechanized thing churns out this garbage, which he then sells to people and feeds James on opening day.
Right. I think
Cristiano Ronaldo's coming and the best you can do is serve the media your crappy leftover Pandoro from last season.
Hey, look, I was glad to get something, Gab. Sometimes, you know, when you go to the Italian clubs, you know, when you've been spoiled by Premier League fare, you know, you don't get anything. So, you know, a bit of heavy Pandoro.
You
need some sugar, you know.
Well, Chievo, who have looked like the fairy tale's very much over for them, the clock has struck midnight, they've turned back into a pumpkin, or what you will. This weekend, actually, staging a remarkable comeback against Roma from 2-0 down to 2-2 under one of the heroes of that early rise, Lorenzo Danna, who's a qualified lawyer and came through, I think, every division with the Flying Donkeys and is now on the bench as their manager.
I think he owns a flat which looks over Romeo and Juliet's balcony.
Is that right?
Yeah. His wife, Carlotta, could actually open the window and look out on the
terrace talk.
Of a different kind.
Okay, so but now with this points penalty, can they stay up? Is Gabrielli finally going to get to see this blemish on the face of Serie A wiped away? Or are they going to continue stinking up the place with their Pandoro?
The prosecutor asked for a 15 points penalty.
Which is what Cesena got.
Right.
So what's
which
going?
Is well though with Cesena they could have given them a million points penalty.
Yeah, sure.
Because they were bust. That was one of those like, you know, it's kind of like when the guy in death row confesses to 50 murders. You know, it's kind of like okay, you know. But no, I think when I saw I was appalled when I saw the 3 points penalty.
Yeah.
You know, because what kind of message are we sending?
Yeah.
And now these schifosi are gonna they're somehow gonna stay up because you just know, right? You know, you look at these other, you know, poor Frosinone. Longo seems like a nice guy, but they're frankly terrible. You know, then there's gonna be another big club that somehow implodes, and you know they're somehow gonna sneakily go and stay up on the last day of the season playing that same crappy football that, you know, even Maran. Okay, I'm happy for him. He got a nice job. what kind of nonsense football from like the 1980s was he playing?
Yeah. Well, Chievo football from the 1980s, because he was part of the 1980s Chievo team, which is the other thing, is that they've always had a very kind of strong sense of their own identity, and they just keep appointing the guys who used to be there. Even Sartori, who was the sporting director who for many years found these kind of players, you know, be them playing in Switzerland or the French second division or in lower leagues in Italy. You know, he was a player for that club.
Have you noticed that most Chievo players, except maybe for Corini, who was good beforehand, and I suppose Perrotta, I think that a lot of them, when they move to other clubs, they become terrible. I'm thinking of Marazzina, I'm thinking of Luciano.
You know what, the interesting thing about
some of
that,
Barzagli, I guess, is one who didn't, but still.
But I was looking at their signings over the last 15 years or so, and given their reputation, you would expect them to be selling guys that they bought for nothing for a hell of a lot of money, right? And instead, their biggest ever sale, I think, is what they got for Roberto Inglese this summer from Napoli. The rest are kind of like between 5-7 million. She's nothing when you think
of... Who was the other guy, the midfielder also played left back, who was French?
Kevin Constant.
Yeah. He was good. He looked really good. And then he goes to Milan and he becomes really, really bad.
Yeah. And was wearing a dicky bow with no shirt on. Yeah. Those were the dark days of Milan.
Oh, damn, yeah. So listen, because it troubles me, I left Italy in 2002 when Chievo were still that team. It troubles me that we've talked this way about
the What do they
the
mean to you,
donkeys.
James?
No, I just want to... For me, they were a breath of fresh air at the time. And, okay, that fresh air had gone a bit stale, but I'm staggered at what has been going on. Let's just finish off with something positive, Gab. Who's your favourite Chievo player of all time?
Oh, wow.
Cossato.
I'm going to say Serge Pellissier.
Oh, it's got to be Pellissier.
What a hero.
He scored more goals in Serie A than Marco van Basten.
Wow. What a hero.
He still wears this horrendous orange Casio that he's been taking into pre-season training camp with him for 20 years. Yeah, I mean, Sergio Pellissier is one of the good guys now.
Look, they're not all... It's not like everybody who's ever been associated with Chievo is bad. But... And look, maybe Campedelli was good originally. But... He's certainly now in the dark side. And I think that this nonsense has been allowed to go on for way, way too long.
That could refer to a lot of things. Well, next up on this Golazzo, we'll have a quick chat about what Inter did against Spurs on Tuesday night. And we'll also be hearing why Ivan Gazidis is rocking up himself at San Siro.
Golazzo!
Gab, Ivan Gazidis, chief executive of Arsenal, walks out to join Milan. This has been confirmed this week, Gab, is that right?
Yeah, it was confirmed on Tuesday.
Okay, and so why has he done it? And what is he going to do to the Rossoneri?
Well, I wrote a long piece about this for ESPN, because I actually wrote on Monday that a bunch of people said, look, he's negotiating his exit, there's no turning back now. But in a nutshell, from an Arsenal perspective, I think for most people, it doesn't really make a lot of sense what he's doing, because he had this long-standing back and forth with Arsene Wenger. Now Wenger's gone. Mm-hmm. Now he's the big boss. His owner, Stan Kroenke, bought out Usmanov. Now his owner, you know, owns 100% of the club. He appointed his own guys, obviously the manager, Raul Sanjehi, who leads the football operations, this guy Mislintat. So basically he had all his people in. Many of these guys came because he was there. He's the second highest paid executive in English football, and I believe in Europe as a whole. And now all of a sudden, he bolts for Milan. You can look at this different ways. One is that he wants a new challenge, and it's odd because he doesn't speak Italian. It's a new league for him. Another one is there's a personal level, and it's a story of a beautiful friendship between two men, Ivan Gazidis and Gordon Singer, who've known each other for many, many years. According to one story, which I wasn't able to stand up, they play five-a-side together. Gordon Singer is the son of Paul Singer, and they own this hedge fund called Elliott, which, of course, we've been through the story of how they came to own Milan, and Gordon trusts Ivan implicitly, and so he wants Ivan to be there. Others have said that he's going to get a lot more money at Milan.
Really? Would that be possible?
I don't believe it's true at all. I think his base salary is actually, from what I've been told, his base salary is going to be lower. He does have, obviously, bonuses, maybe even an equity play, because obviously the thing with Milan is throwing out very broad numbers, but Elliott acquired the club for $400 million. most people would probably figure that it was worth maybe 600, 650 million, probably not the 740 million that Lee and the other snake oil salesman bought it from originally. But so the idea is a guy like Gazidis can grow the club commercially, right? Mm. So then you grow it so it's worth $1 billion.
And then flip it in 3 to 5 years.
Elliot sells, yeah, and Gazidis gets a big slice of the increase. But there's a few problems with it. One is that, first of all, this is Elliot. They could sell tomorrow and then, you know, if somebody comes along, because ultimately they have a responsibility to shareholders. But the other thing that's interesting is you wonder how much can Ivan actually do to the club? So obviously Milan have a ton of things going for them. They are a great squad and so on. But, you know, key positions, Paolo Maldini as director of football development.
Yes.
And, you know, he's got a funny title.
He does Leonardo's photocopying.
Yeah. And Leonardo as director of football, you know, those roles have been filled. Commercially, I think that's where Ivan's expected to go and make have the biggest impact. I'm sure he'll do a great job. Again, the bar set very low by the people who came before him. But you can grow that. But what you know, you're not going to be able to go and grow revenue via TV money straight away, because Serie A just signed their big TV deal. You know, Milan aren't in the Champions League this year. Stadium-wise, obviously they make a killing off the Emirates, but again, it's not easy to do that with the San Siro or to go and build a new stadium. So I think it's a real gamble for Gazidis as well. But again, if you're a Milan fan, whatever happens, you're in a much, much better situation than you were 12 months ago.
You know FFP better than most people, Gab. I mean, there's a talk at the moment about them maybe even trying to get a voluntary agreement again because there's been a change of ownership.
Yeah, so again, I don't know if I bored people enough with the amortization thing. So again, picture Margot Robbie as I speak and pretend it's her voice that you're hearing and she's in the bubble bath. Yeah, so basically, Milan are already subject to a settlement agreement from UEFA, and this is for massive losses that were incurred actually before Lee even took over the club. Then obviously Lee comes in, they spend a ton on players last summer, so there's even more losses coming. Now, what UEFA allows you to do is if there's been a change of ownership, you can sign something called a voluntary agreement where, you know, the argument is you're not responsible for losses that came before, but you need to bring a credible business plan about how you're going to grow revenues in the long term. So they allow you to go and basically spend money, make more losses for a year, 2 years, maybe even 3 years, as long as then there's a positive trend and you make all the money back in year four, year five. So that's something Milan can go and try to do. I think it's going to be difficult. I mean, I think they will get one, but I don't think it's going to give them that much latitude. I think all it means is they're still going to be able to play in Europe simply because the losses accrued before were so big.
Thanks, Gab. Here's a towel. Now, across town at Inter, they are in Europe. And what a remarkable result they had on Tuesday against Spurs. We'll talk about that in the final part of this Golazzo after this. Pazza Inter doing their usual pazzia then on Tuesday night. They were looking for a turnaround to a season that has not begun well. They were all the way down in 14th place after the weekend's action in Serie A. Weekend's action which saw them lose at San Siro to newly promoted Parma and basically look clueless as per usual. They went a goal behind against Spurs. Gabrielli, as someone with, you know, Nerazzurri leanings, what did you think was going to happen then? A comeback?
Yeah, right. No, of course not. I mean, this is Inter. And I thought, you know, in the run-up to the game, I thought, all right, I think Spurs have been really poor this season too, the win at United notwithstanding. And so I thought, oh, look, two poor teams and two teams that are known over the years for their inconsistency. You know, I think Spursy certainly applies to Inter as well. But I thought one team is Pochettino. The other team has a guy who's gone the way of Mr. Kurtz and Heart of Darkness, you know, where he's now a god in his own mind and has lost it. And it looked to me like that's the way it was doing. You know,
So how did it happen? How did they end up
winning? Then something happens. It never happens.
Right.
Mauro Icardi actually shoots. Well, Asamoah puts in a bad cross, which does happen, unfortunately. And then Mauro Icardi just this incredible thing where he just hits the cover off the ball from outside the box, which Icardi doesn't do. The guy doesn't shoot from outside
the
box.
Only his fifth goal in the 108 that he scored for Inter from outside the box.
Extraordinary.
Per Icardi al volo! Eccolo qua! Icardi al volo! Gol fenomenale di Maurizio Icardi!
And then, there wasn't that long to go, but they still managed to find a winner, and I guess that's where the Spursiness came in.
Yeah, I suppose, although you can add this to the definition of Spursy this season, which is they cannot defend set pieces to save their lives. We saw that against Watford, saw it against Liverpool. Inter, I think this was the most appropriate way for them to win this game, because it's essentially how they qualified, how they got back into the Champions League. Last-minute late goal from Matias Vecino. And, Vecino is why they're in the Champions League, essentially, because let's not forget what happened at the end of last season. Inter qualified because someone else choked more than they did, which is Lazio. And Vecino, who popped up to score this one, scored the goal that ended this 6.5-year wait for them to be back in the Champions League.
Right. So they had a big banner up before the game against Spurs in English saying simply, "We are back." Now, the papers yesterday were suggesting that a win in Europe could spark a revival for the Nerazzurri, a team that does have a good squad, or a squad with many talented players, but as yet hasn't really impressed or looked anything like the anti-Juve that we were predicting before the start of the season.
They had the best kind of start to the season you could imagine in terms of, you look at the fixture list, they've got Sassuolo, Torino, Parma and Bologna. Yeah, they should be on 9 to maximum points.
Right. Do you see them back now with this? Are they still fundamentally missing something?
I'll tell you this. I was only watching on television, but the Icardi goal and the way it came, those last, however many minutes of the game, San Siro was absolutely rocking in a way that I'm sure it must have happened since Mourinho left, but I don't remember. I mean, that's what you associate with them, was the Mourinho. The year that Mourinho nearly cost them the title because he frittered away that giant lead and they actually went behind Claudio Ranieri's Roma. You remember that? Yeah, I mean, it was horrendous.
But
at the end, when they came back, I mean, it was that same energy, that belief that we can do this. And Inter have had big crowds for a while now, well over 50,000. But this really was special. And now it's up to Spalletti to go and channel the energy. In Italy, we have this bad habit that, so it used to be all about results. Now we do point out when teams play well. So, for example, the Parma game, I don't think Inter deserved to lose that. And no. They all focused on the penalty. Just focus on the fact that Inter created more chances and played relatively well. But Inter is so fragile mentally, so we focus on, who's got, personalità? Who's got the palle? And this idea of leadership, which I think is important, but gets way over-egged. Inter have leaders.
Isn't the problem that they don't have a creative brain in midfield?
Yeah, what they tried to do in the summer, which was sign Luka Modric, I think in part because that was a response to, Juve have gone and got Cristiano Ronaldo. But that's something that they need. They've needed it for years. I mean, they signed Borja Valero.
Borja Valero's your creative. And I know he's been poor since coming over.
But actually, he was on field when the comeback happened.
Yes, he came on. And he helped make it happen. But, not so much with the sort of creative playmaking.
Right.
But Borja has been completely forgotten about. And
he's been poor for a while.
He's paid a lot of money, because he came on a free transfer. And it's almost like Spalletti found him down the back of the sofa last night, because it was just like, where else has he been? He should be playing.
They have Brozovic, who was a monster in the World Cup, I thought. But again,
in that kind of pulling the strings role?
Well, he did well at the end of last season. That was one of the things that really clicked for Inter, is Brozovic all of a sudden seemed to just become the player that they wanted. Him to become and needed in that someone in the middle of the park.
But also so inconsistent, the Braz. Yeah. I mean, he's... And the other problem with the other guys, whether it's Valero or Matias Vecino, is they're also freaking slow, And it's just, again, I think it's a poorly constructed team, not for the first time, but weirdly Piero Osilio keeps getting new contracts, so...
The issue for me, Gab, is what worked for his last season? Okay, we had Brozovic playing in front of the defence, we've got Cancelo, we've got Rafinha just playing off the striker, and all of a sudden they've become a little bit less predictable and start creating chances. And, we've kind of let Cancelo go to Juve because we've got to get our financial fair play in order because we signed Gian Mario Gabigol for, you know, basically the cost of the entire Lazio team. And Rafinha, yeah, we're not so hot on that. We'll get Raja, even though, you know, the option to sign Rafinha was so expensive. But it's like you've just taken away two of the three components which made your team better last year.
Okay, well, we'll see how this year's Inter fare this weekend, how much momentum they can take into this from the midweek Champions League victory. They are away at Sampdoria, who are, ooh, right now one of the hottest sides in Serie A, fresh from a 5-0 victory last weekend against Frosinone. Sampdoria, ooh, with Grégoire Defrel, with Caprari, and of course with Quagliarella. Be afraid, Gabriele.
They're playing tonight against Fiorentina.
In the game postponed because of the bridge disaster in Genoa.
Yes, I would say that if you're not watching Champions League football tonight, check that out because they're two pretty exciting teams. Federico Chiesa, Cholito Simeone. Mm.
Youngest team in Europe's Big Five, as I discovered.
Fiorentina?
Yeah, I mean, I read it on the internet, so it's probably fake news. But I know, but it was them and Leipzig were like head and head. This being Inter, things you hold can crumble and run through your fingers like dust, as you well know, James.
Yeah. But you know,
it's just a drop of ocean in an endless sea, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. But they should be all right for this season. You think they're 14th, but they'll probably stay up.
I would imagine so.
Okay, good.
I would imagine so.
All right, listeners, thank you for staying with us. Galatza will return next week when we'll find something else topical and something else not so topical to discuss. For now, many thanks to James Horngossel and Gabriele Marcotti. Listener, thank you ever so much. For now, from all of us here, it's arrivederci. Campionato di calcio italiano. You've been listening to Galazzo, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and make sure you check out our other podcasts this season. The Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker and the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.